Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he struck him on the hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the day is breaking." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then the man said, "You shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with humans and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life is preserved."
The gospel lesson comes from the 5th chapter of Mark. With most stories in the gospel, the version in Mark is usually the shortest and the briefest and the least descriptive, but not in this case. This is one of the few places where Mark dives down deep into the characters. And like the story from Genesis, it has quite a bit to say about the power of names. Jesus and the disciples came to the other side of the lake. This is what we often call the Sea of Galilee, to the country of the Gerasenes. And when he had stepped out of the boat, immediately, and you all know that's one of Mark's favorite words, immediately a man out of the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. He lived among the tombs, and no one could restrain him with shackles and chains, but the chains he wrenched apart, and the shackles he broke into pieces, and no one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always howling and bruising himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran down and bowed before him. And he shouted at the top of his lungs, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High? I adjure you by God, do not torment me." For he had said to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" And he replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." He begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now there on the hillside, a great herd of swine was feeding. And the unclean spirits begged him, "Send us into the swine, let us enter them." So he gave them permission. And the unclean spirits came out and entered the swine. And the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned in the lake. The swineherds ran off and told it to the city and in the country. And then people came out to see what it was that had happened. They came to Jesus and saw the demoniac sitting there clothed and in his right mind, the very man who had the legion, and they were afraid. Those who had seen what had happened to the demoniac and to the swine reported it. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed by the demons begged him that he might be with him. But Jesus refused and said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and what mercy God has shown you. And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone was amazed. I think I have yours. Bob was getting all those slides right without a script. It's impressive. There's a well-known scene in Shakespeare's play Romeo and Juliet, when Juliet is out on the balcony bemoaning loudly that her beloved belongs to the Montague family, which is her family's, the Capulet's family's, rival and arch enemy. She surmises that his despised name should not matter. She comes to a place in her soliloquy where she says that what you call something is just a word. It's just a collection of sounds coming out of your mouth. It's just a symbol that doesn't reflect on the deeper reality at all. Well, she doesn't say that. She says this, because it's Shakespeare. She says, a rose, she says, by any other name would smell as sweet. It's a lovely sentiment. But behavioral psychologists have proven that Juliet, sadly, is quite wrong. If you grew up in a culture that called a rose a stink blossom bush, people would wrinkle their nose in disgust as they walked by. Smells, how we perceive a smell is based on what our culture says it is. It's good or bad. Is it sweet or rotten? Names matter, even if that is horribly unfair for Juliet and Romeo. Names have power, even if they do damage, or perhaps especially when they do damage. In the ancient world, the worldview that gave us the scriptures, your name, any name actually, had deep metaphysical power. If you cursed someone or blessed someone in the name of this deity or that deity, that blessing or curse carried with it the full power of that god. That's why the commandment that you shall not utter the Lord's name in vain is, it's not your grandma saying not to swear. It's not about that at all. It's do not curse some poor schmuck in the name of Yahweh, in the name of the God of Israel. That's the misuse of the power of that name. It was believed that knowing someone else's name when they didn't know yours gave you a special power over that person. Because your name made you vulnerable. Your name broadcast to the world something of your deepest nature. We see that throughout the Old Testament, the Hebrew scriptures, where someone's name almost predicts what their behavior will be later in life. Jacob, from the Genesis story today, Yaakov in Hebrew, meant to grasp by the heel or to usurp, and that seemed to determine Jacob's personality and his fate for the rest of his life. But the other thing in Hebrew scriptures and in the New Testament that you find is that when you endure some life-changing event, you might change your name to reflect the change that happened inside. You change your name to show it on the outside. And so Jacob, in our scene from Genesis, after struggling all night with the divine, becomes Israel, one who wrestles with God. So Simon, after becoming a disciple, becomes Peter. So Saul, after his Damascus Road experience, becomes Paul. Their names changed because who they had become by any other name would not match who they were inside any longer. In Mark's gospel today, we read of Jesus' encounter with a man whose name has defined him, imprisoned him, and shackled him with self-hatred and abuse. Mark writes, "Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always howling and bruising himself with stones." I wonder if we can't see ourselves there too. When we see clearly enough or honestly enough to look at our own sorrows and pains and fears, when we look at our self-defeating, self-perpetuating cycles and behaviors, and the voices inside that wonder, what if someone finds out what I'm really like? What if they find out how messed up I am? Mark writes, "When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and bowed down before him, and he shouted at the top of his voice, 'What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me.' For he had said to him, 'Come out of the man, you unclean spirit.' Then Jesus asked him, 'What is your name?' And he replied, 'My name is Legion, for we are many.'" "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me." Do you remember saying that reassuring little chant to yourself on the tour or to your playground tormentors, your eyes brimming with hot tears? Oh, if only it were true, huh? But names do far more damage than breaking mere bones. Names break souls. They paralyze hearts. They distort minds. They separate us one from another. I remember hearing years ago on the radio, and full disclosure, I have not been able to corroborate it with any online research. I've looked around, I can't find it. But I remember hearing a piece about a team of anthropologists who were going around the world recording children's chants and sounds and noises and those of pre-verbal children, going around the world to see if there was some primal human noise that before we can speak, we chant, we say. And they were trying to prove a hypothesis that there was some universal pre-verbal human language, a sound, a collection of syllables or notes that meant the same thing everywhere, no matter the culture, the geography, or the spoken language. And they didn't find one everywhere. But the most common pre-language sound they did find in wildly different cultures around the world was this. Na 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 na. Now, different words, when there were words, were brought to them. In English countries, it's na 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 boo boo or some rough equivalent to that. Those words are tied linguistically to England, but the notes That set of notes are heard all over the world. And universally, they signal, you are bad, you don't belong. We are us and you are other, go away. Yet, do you see the irony of one, the one universal sound that human beings make is also the most tribal? School children all over the world with one voice singing to a hurting person, you don't belong to us. What seems to make us human at a most basic level is the need to push someone else away in order to define who we and our tribe are. This need we have to define someone else as alien, as illegitimate, as other, as non-human. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names? Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always howling and bruising himself with stones. It is to such a one that Jesus comes. Enfleshing, as Mark Olson puts it, the amazing truth that God is a God who embraces, a God whose arms reach out to all who are sent off, shut out, locked up, or chained down, a God who enfolds all who are enduring the deep, abiding terror of life on the edge, life among the tombs, and that, I suspect, he writes, is all of us. Jesus plunged into those tombs of Gerasa on the far side of the Sea of Galilee, for there was someone who needed to be brought back from the edge, and that is all of us. Not that the man's demons were ready for such an encounter. What have you to do with us, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you in the name of God, do not torment me. Remember the power of names in ancient times? This demon lets Jesus know that he knows Jesus' name, his deepest identity, in order to have a certain amount of power over him. And then, strangest of all, this demon begs by the power of God's name not to be tormented by the power of God. It's demon logic. And Jesus, in turn, demands to know the demon's name. I am Legion, for we are many. A legion, depending on what era, was an army of several thousand Roman soldiers. The very soldiers who occupied the land on which Jesus and the demoniac stood right at that moment. What a powerful and terrifying name for an occupied people. And Mark wants you to know that this is an occupied man. Thousands of psychic spears and swords aimed outward and inward in this tortured soul. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. I doubt if this man was ever called Legion by the town folks. And probably not 10,000 times. But I wonder if he was called 10,000 times. Insane, devil, monster, other, it. Did those names shackle him and chain him and give him voice to howl in the tombs and the stones with which to pummel himself? I'm not going to spend any time this morning talking about how do we as moderns diagnose this man. Is he schizophrenic? Is he multiple personality disorder? That's not that important. And I won't spend any time this morning on this amazing scene with the pigs and the demons begging Jesus not to be made homeless. Send us into the pigs, we beg you. And the pell-mell chaos of swine over the cliff and swine herds scrambling back to the village. And then in the silence that followed, the important part. This man, not only in his right mind, but free of the power of the name foisted upon him. Legion. Free to be human again, free to be part of his family, free to be part of his community, free to belong. For the power of to be exorcised. Except for one last wall, which was his family and community. I am always flabbergasted by the family and friends and community of this poor guy. They come out to see what the swineherds have been shouting about, and they see this man, their brother, their son, this companion, this formerly possessed soul, sitting at Jesus' feet, clothed and in his right mind, and they're not amazed. They're not grateful. They don't run up and hug him till he can't breathe, saying, "Dude, you're back, you're whole, thank God you're okay. Come on home. Have some dinner." They don't do any of these things. They're just afraid. They can't make sense of what's happened, and they're not sure they want to see more. All they can muster the strength to do is ask Jesus to leave. Without so much as a thank you, they ask this healer to go away. And Jesus, without any word recorded by Mark, gets in the boat to leave. But as the wind begins to fill the sail and the boat starts to edge away from the shore, Jesus hears one voice. Maybe that one. It sounds like it's the leftovers of the swine. The man whom he healed begs Jesus to be able to come along. Of course he wants to come along. There he stands on the shore, alone. So alone. In front of him, Jesus, who gave him life, renewed and whole, sailing away. And behind him are the town folk and the family members who, in fear, drove him out into the graveyard. And aren't ready to welcome him back. Of course he wants to go with the one who healed him, who wasn't afraid to come near him, who didn't walk around on the other side of the street or take a big detour around the graveyard. He wants to go with his Lord and Master and hear the good news of the kingdom of God. He's ready to follow Jesus, and he'll have no trouble leaving without looking back. There's no one on shore who will miss him. There's no one on shore who will even risk saying farewell and goodbye. He begs, we're told, begs to go with Jesus. But Jesus says, no. Padraig O Tuama, a human rights activist in Belfast, noted in a radio show that the verb to beg, some form of the verb to beg, occurs 9 times in Mark's gospel. Almost half of them right in this story. There's a lot of begging going on. 8 times in the Gospel of Mark, Jesus acquiesces when someone begs him for something. Even the requests of demons, Jesus acquiesces to. The only time Jesus says no to someone begging him is when this man begs to follow. And Jesus says, stay here. Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you. And that is perhaps the most important line in the whole story. Jesus doesn't reject the man's offer to follow him. Rather, he accepts his offer and gives him a mission field that is decidedly closer than the man wanted. In fact, home. And that may be the most difficult place there is to do ministry. In the place where everybody knows you and your history and your names, and you know everybody too. You see, Jesus calls every one of us by name, we're told. But he doesn't always call us to follow him to the ends of the earth. Sometimes he calls us to stay right where we are and witness there to God's great love right here, right now. Jesus says to some, come and follow me. And to some he says, go and follow me. And to some, he says, stay and follow me. And show what it is to live without fear. Show what it is to live in extravagant love. Show what it is to live with grace and forgiveness. To embody, like Jesus, a God whose arms stretch out to all who are sent off, shut out, locked up, or chained down. A God who enfolds all who are enduring the deep abiding terror of life on the edge, life among the tombs. Juliet was wrong. A rose by any other name? No. Names have power. There are demonic names that have the power to disconnect us and destroy family and community. There are demonic names that send some of us to wander in the graveyards of depression and abuse and addiction and loneliness. There are demonic names that send our children into the city streets to ply a living with their bodies. There are demonic names that force our poor and homeless into dark, isolated corners and send the refugees across borders into strange, unwelcoming lands. The demonic names others have called us, and we have called others, have power not just to wound us, but to isolate us and cripple us and paralyze us with fear and dread. worthless, unlovable, lazy, stupid, ugly, fag, slut, tranny, wetback, junkie, illegal, redneck, libtard. The demonic names are those that say you do not belong, that you are not connected, that you are not related. The names may not be legion, but you have felt the possession. But you have another name. You have a deeper name that's been given you by God, that says you do belong, that says you are beloved and precious. I call you by name. And that name has more power. A beloved child of God by any other name might be broken and hurt and fragile. A demoniac by any other name might be a source of healing and renewal. We don't know what happened to the man after Jesus left. My hope is that he was able to re-enter into community and family, and that he who used to be a locus of hatred and fear could become a source of love and inclusion and hospitality and wholeness, because he was liberated from the demonic name and could grasp deeply onto the name that God gave him. For all of us today, I pray that we don't let demonic narratives be what holds us down. I pray that the power of God can give you the power to be a source of generosity from which you and all those around you will benefit and grow. That even our graveyards can become the places of hospitality and love. That you may find your home in the very place you thought you had to leave. On the back of your bulletin, or in your bulletin, on the back of the calendar, is our second Lenten question. We talked about Jacob and how his name had power to shape who he was. This week, I invite you to choose a name, or ask yourself a question, if you could choose a name that reflected your inner being or your relationship with God, what would it be? It might be a proper name, Yaakov, or an adjective or a title. Think of more than one and write them down and reflect on why you chose them and what they mean. What is the divine name within you that can overpower the demonic names that have been placed upon you? What is the name at your core that says, you are my beloved and precious, and I love you? For by any other name, that is who you are.